Welcome to our latest episode of Interactive Insights. My name is Lindsay Henderson and I'm joined this morning by Gordon McElroy, who is going to speak about investment agreements today.
Morning, Lindsay.
Morning, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. And you?
Good, I'm good. So I suppose we just get straight into it on this topic. And first and foremost, it's probably important to establish what we actually mean when we're talking about investment agreements.
Well, I suppose an investment agreement can be almost anything where somebody puts money into another person's business in order to stimulate it, to develop it, or it could go into property. It covers a multitude of sins, and we'll develop some of those concepts as we talk on.
Agreed. From your perspective, why do you think they're significant for both investors and businesses? What would be your selling point to potential clients in front of you on both sides?
Well, for more structured transactions, everybody expects to have an agreement in place because they're more sophisticated investors, they're more sophisticated businesses, and those now follow fairly well-recognised patterns. We'll come on to them later on. We do still have people who come in and they have invested into businesses with little documentation. They haven't recorded the terms of it. And that's great if it all works out and if everybody's happy. But when things go wrong, then it sadly gets passed over to our litigation department, which isn't a great place for people to be. So really, they're there just to document the nature of the relationship, what everybody's expectations are, and to make sure that people are going forward together.
In terms of the actual terms contained within an investment agreement, what are the common ways that this can be structured that you've seen over the years?
Well, the first thing is to work out, is it debt or is it equity? So is it something that's in the nature of a loan going into the business? That might be just a simple loan agreement. It might be somebody taking preference shares, or if there are if there's a group of investors involved in it, it might be a loan note so that several people can participate and they're all doing it in the same terms. The other structure is where there's participation in the underlying value of the business or the asset, and if you hope that there will be growth in it and everybody participates in the growth. In that case, it's an equity investment and you have different considerations that apply.
I think then what you're saying is that what the key point is that it can take a number of forms. It's not just as straightforward as a joint venture agreement, for example, that some people may think that that's what we're talking about when we talk about investment agreements.
Yeah, and likewise, a joint venture agreement can have many different forms as well. But yes, an investment agreement can be as simple or as complicated as people want it to be.
In terms of rights granted in an investment agreement, what kind of rights would you ordinarily expect to see granted to an investor, for example?
Again, it's going to depend almost entirely on the circumstances, but assuming that it's a significant investment being made, you would expect an investor to want to have board representation. That might be as a member of the board, it might only be as an observer on the board. They will want to know that there are significant decisions that can't be taken by the company without their approval. Those are usually referred to as reserved matters. They'll need to know what their recourse is if things go wrong. So will they take some security? Will there be a debenture in place? They want to understand what the scope of authority of the board and the management of the company is. Will there be an agreed budget? Must the management operate within the scope of that budget? So it can be anything from very high level to drilling right down into the day-to-day conduct of the business, and that will all be determined by the circumstances.
One of the things in my experience in investment agreements that has come up quite often on both investor side and business side is people are very interested in knowing what the exit strategies are for an investor. Is that something that you've encountered quite a lot in terms of, do you think that's a topic of conversation?
For investors more than joint ventures, it's absolutely essential. Investors are by and large going in because they want to see a return on investment. That's frequently time driven. So if you take a private equity firm, one of the larger private equity firms, they will always have a time frame within which they expect to see their return on investment. And then an essential element is what happens if that time frame isn't met. What's their recourse? What are their remedies? What's going to have to happen? Perhaps it's a bit more flexible where it's a slightly more informal arrangement. But the nature of investment is it's about return, and it's about return over time rather than an absolute return.
And I can see the benefit of that from the business side as well, because if it's an equity investment, for example, some businesses would like to regain complete control of their business, so it works for both sides.
Yeah, and that's often the case, that the exit is in the form of an option for the founders, the promoters of the business, to buy out the investor, as long as the investor is satisfied with the return that they're getting.
And obviously any investment doesn't come without risk. What are the most common potential risks to an investor in relation to this?
At the risk of sounding facetious, failure is the most obvious one. But there are the risks at the extreme, I suppose, such as fraudulent behaviour on the part of the business owners. And you do see that from time to time, but all the standard agreements will do what they can to protect against it. You can't absolutely protect against a dishonest person. There's a very old expression, you can watch a thief, but you can't watch a liar.
My granny used to say that all the time.
And that's absolutely true. But then at the more commercial end, there's the risk that once you've put in investment, if it's not enough, are you going to have to chase the investment? Is more money going to be needed? Is there an obligation to put more money in? Where does the commitment stop? And then if your commitment has stopped, is there going to be another investor who comes in behind that because his equity is getting cheaper than yours was?
And is there any way that an investor can mitigate these risks to an extent?
You can't entirely mitigate the commercial risks. They just are commercial risks, and that's why you're entitled to a return on your money, which is more than you get from putting it in the bank. You can mitigate the risks of people's behaviour. We go back to having board appointments. Perhaps if there is default on the terms of the investment agreement, then you're entitled to exercise whatever security you have. You might be entitled to increase your representation on the board. You might have share swamping rights, where you can call on the company to issue a lot more shares, which gives you effective control over the voting at shareholder level. Where there is default, the defaulting party can be excluded from taking decisions about the management and control of the company, either during the period of the default or absolutely. The defaulting party might be compelled to offer its shares to the non-defaulting party, to probably the investor in that case, and those shares may have to be offered at a discount.
So what I take from this answer is that the answer is actually they can mitigate the risk by having a good legal team in place that can negotiate
these. Well,
that
is, of course, absolutely correct, yes, and there's no better legal team than MKB Law.
Agreed. Yeah. Obviously, we would say that. So obviously, you've got a lot of experience in this area. Can you maybe give us an example of a real-life case study that you've seen in a successful investment agreement in play?
So a very good, well-structured agreement that allowed a substantial amount of cash to be put in by debt. This is a fairly well-tried and tested formula. There was a group of investors, so the debt element went in by way of loan notes. The loan notes are convertible so that they can be converted into equity in the business in, let's say, a three-year period. The rate at which they are converted is set at the outset. So based on a valuation at day one, or a little bit of hope built into it, if the investors are satisfied, then they can convert half of the cash that they have put in into shares, and those shares should be sold later for much more, hopefully much more, than the conversion rate. In the meantime, that's protected by a debenture, and it's also protected by agreements allowing, as we discussed earlier, board observers, various events of default, things that will trigger additional rights for the investors to protect their position. And that has worked out extremely successfully for all parties concerned. It gave, what's the whole point of talking about this? It gave the company the money that it needed to springboard forward. The company grew very successfully because of the cash coming in, because of the investment. That's what it's all about. And everybody was able to participate in the upside.
That sounds really interesting. In terms of any practical tips or strategies for negotiating an investment agreement, is there anything you could offer to anybody listening to this?
I suppose the first thing is understand what it is that you're expecting to get out of it. And that's something that we see quite often, that there's not really clarity about what the outcome should be. Again, if you're dealing with an established private equity fund, they will understand that. There will be proper term sheet, and there's clarity around it. But a lot
that's
of
that's an important point.
It really is important to get a good term sheet, heads of terms drawn up before you start preparing the detailed legal documents. We still find the high net worth individuals who are making investments, you know, perhaps they've sold a business and they have cash, don't have a clear idea of what the exit should be, don't have a clear idea of what the structure and the level of risk that they're prepared to take on. And our job, and it doesn't matter really whether it's our job in something like this or it's our job in a mergers and acquisitions transaction or many other types of transaction, is making sure that the allocation of risk is correct. We need to understand where risk should lie and that it is allocated to the correct parties. I suppose if you had advice to give to somebody who's doing this for the first time, it is understand, of course, A, what you're investing into, do your due diligence around it, and understand what your objectives are. What do you expect to get out? What's the time frame for getting that out? And how much other time and effort are you going to have to put into it?
That's good advice, and I think it's advice that actually would speed the process up for anybody coming into it for the first time. If they've got that established at the start,
yes,
it should make the process a lot less painful.
The conversations have to be honest conversations.
Thank you. I think that was really interesting. Thanks, Gordon.
Pleasure.
I think for anybody listening to that, they'll take something away from it. For anybody that has any queries in relation to anything we've discussed, please don't hesitate to get in touch.